Many people believe buying a home requires a large down payment and years of saving, but that's not always the case. Across the country, there are programs designed to help first-time homebuyers take the next step toward home ownership. Some of these programs offer down payment assistance or grant funding that may help cover part of the upfront cost of purchasing a home. Grants are especially helpful because they generally do not have to be repaid. There are also organizations that provide homebuyer education, financial counseling, and guidance to help individuals understand the home buying process before they begin. The goal is simple: to help more families become informed and prepared for home ownership. If owning a home is something you've been thinking about, start by visiting toolsforhomeownership.com. This message is brought to you by the National Foundation for Credit Counseling's Paving the Way Forward initiative.
And welcome in to a Friday edition of the Carolina Journal News Hour on Charlotte's FM News Talk, 107.9 FM, WBT. I'm Nick Craig. Good morning to you. We've got an exclusive brand new poll out from CarolinaJournal.com here on the News Hour this morning to walk us through some of those details. David Larson, CarolinaJournal.com, joins us here on the program. It's been a couple of months, David, since we've had the opportunity to chat about some of the details in our Carolina Journal poll. Let's start right at the top. Direction of the country. Only 34% of voters say that the country is heading in the right direction. 60%, almost 61% now say things are heading in the wrong track. These are some of the highest and lowest numbers we've seen for both of those questions, respectively, over the last couple of months here on our Carolina Journal poll.
Absolutely, yes. And that's not always, you know, a good thing for whoever has. It's already difficult if you have the party who has the president in power for a midterm. But then also, if these numbers are getting worse and worse for how people are thinking of the overall direction of things, that's tends to be an even worse issue for the party in power, you know, who has the president in power during a midterm. So, you know, it has been getting worse when we tracked it over the last few months. And, you know, well, we can get into some of the reasons why later. You know, we talk about what issues are the top issues for people, but that's clearly the trend right now.
You know, it's interesting. Compared to our May poll, we have had a couple of other Carolina Journal polls since May, but we were looking at a variety of different topics, not necessarily asking political questions. So May was the last time we asked a lot of these questions, and that's what we're going to be referring to here throughout the program here this morning. The president's job approval is, for all intents and purposes, unchanged since May. We're talking about margins of 0.1, 0.3 percentage points, very much in the statistical margin of error. However, when we look at the direction of the country, those numbers have a significant difference compared to what we saw in May. That was a little bit surprising to me. Typically, you would assume things heading in the wrong direction, that would be a direct reflection on the president's approval rating. That really hasn't moved since in the last couple of months since we asked it.
Well, I think maybe it just took a little bit of time, maybe for the overall look at how people are feeling about the country to catch up to maybe Trump's numbers. They're both, I would say, in the 60% range. You know, you could raise that 57% up to 60, the 61% of the wrong track down to 60, but really, I do think those numbers are tied together, that, you know, Trump's numbers did take a big dip between our March and our May poll from about 54% to about 57%. And yes, they're still about there, but he's basically stalled at about his lowest that we've had him, which is 57% disapprove. And you see the strongly disapprove has risen from 49 to 51. So 51% of North Carolina is not only disapproved, but strongly disapproved of President Trump. So that is a difficult place to be. And I do think the wrong track is connected to that, as you know, being at its highest as well.
Well, one of the things folks are probably familiar with hearing in politics is the ceiling. Well, while there is a ceiling in a lot of cases, David, there's also a floor. And regardless of whether somebody fully agrees or not with a president or any other political candidate, there is that floor in which realistically the candidate doesn't go much lower due to large party support and large party base. All right, let's move on to what's going on here in North Carolina. We asked folks across the Tar Heel State Do they approve or disapprove of the job that Democrat Governor Josh Stein is doing here? He is now under 50%. He was at 50.1% in May. He's now at 47.2. That's down about 3 percentage points. His disapproval's up a little bit as well. What do you make of that number?
Yeah, it is interesting. I think, you know, we're in a very partisan year. We're in an election year. And so I think some of those people, you know, in the race when he won against Mark Robinson, you had a high percentage, much higher than usual percentage of Republicans that came and voted for him. So I think there was a little bit of a hangover effect there from, you know, a lot of Republicans who voted for him might have been trying to justify their decision there a little bit. And maybe some of that is wearing off now that we're in a new election cycle. So that could be part of it. You also see that the unsures are a little bit higher. So looks like maybe about 2% of people that hadn't been approving are now unsure. So not sure exactly what that is, but they haven't shifted a lot. And there is still, you know, 18.5% of people that are unsure. So if those were all to, you know, be assigned to either approve or disapprove, I think his numbers would still be above 50 if somebody, you know, were forced to decide and have a vote.
Over the last couple of months, what was, for the most part, David, a pretty good relationship, at least early on last year, between the Democrat governor and the Republican-led legislature. However, as we have flipped the calendar over into 2026 and the short session began, there were now more than 13 veto overrides that have taken place. We saw even earlier this week the governor signing one of the technical correction bills, calling the General Assembly and some of the leaders there petty over some of the things that they are doing. You think maybe some of this now fracturing between Democrats and Republicans at that high level maybe could play into some of those numbers as well?
I think so. I think when the rubber hits the road, he's a Democrat. You know, some people might have, they didn't like Mark Robinson, and so they voted for him, and they were hoping. I think, you know, the sort of image that the Democrats have been trying to put up for attorney general and for governor in the past decade or so is sort of the professional, you know, he seems like a moderate, presents himself as a moderate. When the rubber hits the road, though, they do, you know, vote with Democrats or, you know, I mean, in this case, veto like a Democrat. And they, you know, both Cooper and Stein, despite that attempt at that moderate image, vetoed a lot of Republican bills and a lot of ones that had seemed maybe common sense, like should somebody, a homeless person, be able to have an encampment right in a public right of way, like a road or a sidewalk or city square. You know, he vetoed that, a ban on that. And there's other similar things where, you know, you would think this could be something that people come together on, and maybe more conservative voters see those vetoes and think, OK, well, he is a Democrat after all.
Yeah. And we'll, of course, keep an eye on those numbers and the relationship between the governor and the Republican-led General Assembly as we continue through the year. All right, let's move on to a couple of other questions in our poll. There's a lot of races across the state of North Carolina. There's more than 100 members in the North Carolina House here. We've got dozens of members in the Senate. We've got 14 congressional districts. We can't ask about every single one of those races. The poll would be forever, take you 3 hours to take the Carolina Journal poll. So we asked this question, David, known as a generic ballot. And we asked that for both the state legislature, members of the North Carolina General Assembly, and Congress. Democrats in both of those hold about a 5% advantage over Republicans. Is that a number that you would expect to see in a midterm election, which, as you noted back just a couple of minutes ago, is a pretty typical thing in a midterm where you've got a Republican in the Oval Office?
You know, they are actually a little bit surprising in that there's such a distinction being made, maybe between, we can talk about Michael Whatley's numbers in a second, but between Trump and Whatley's numbers and the general direction of the country. But then on a lot of these generic races, I mean, there's still a lot of, you know, people that come home to the Republicans, but, well, who are you actually going to vote for, you know, General Assembly, for Congress? And they come around to that. I think they're close enough that there is a districting advantage that Republicans have, both in the maps for Congress and for the legislature, that, you know, with the 5%, being down 5 looks like in both of these, that they're within striking distance, which for a year that doesn't look good, you know, for Republicans in a lot of ways, I think that's a place they could still hold on to majorities.
David, it's interesting you say that, not to get too far off track, but there's been some national polling as well from some of the big media outlets, NBC News and other major colleges in recent weeks that have been released. And that's been a lot of the analysis there as well is, yes, there is this slight Democrat advantage. Again, no surprise. We're in a midterm election year after the major wins that Republicans had back in 2024. But a lot of the conversation has transitioned into these numbers should be like 8, 9, or even 10% for Democrats. And they're about half of that in many of these polls, maybe a little bit of a warning sign as to what could be coming in November.
Yeah, I think maybe the Democrats, they have to be careful with this advantage that they don't, from their perspective, fumble the bag. You know, they're talking a lot of, you know, nationally, they're getting a lot of attention on democratic socialism and, you know, some of this woke 2.0 that, you know, they're talking about getting rid of ICE, getting rid of defunding the police, things like that, that maybe this woke 2.0 that, you know, they're talking about getting rid of ICE, getting rid of defunding the police, things like that, that maybe they hoped would not be talked about anymore. A lot of the new Democratic candidates nationally that are getting attention are still talking about that stuff. And I think that that could, you know, bring a lot of Republicans back home when they see, oh, these are the two sides basically that we have. I don't really want to have to deal with people trying to have prison abolition where there's no more prison or, you know, there's no more police or borders. That stuff is pretty extreme for people. And I do, it is very, you know, worth noting that some of the North Carolina candidates, Ager out west and Davis, and so those are the two toss-up districts, NC1 and NC11 in North Carolina congressional districts. Both of them joined something called the Promise to America, which is basically a group that is denouncing democratic socialism. So I feel like some of them feel that pressure that, you know, if you're going to be a Democrat in some of these toss-up districts, you know, they're getting a little nervous about maybe I have to repudiate some of the more extreme parts of the party.
Yeah, we're seeing that in the two districts there, rural northeastern North Carolina up against the Virginia border, and obviously all the coverage over the last couple of weeks as it relates to Congressional District 11, which is 16 counties in the western half of North Carolina. We'll dive into details on the United States Senate race between Roy Cooper and Michael Whatley coming up after this with David Larson. You're listening to the Carolina Journal News Hour.
For many people, renting is a convenient option. It offers flexibility and may require less responsibility for maintenance. But owning a home can offer a different set of long-term benefits. Instead of paying rent to a landlord each month, homeowners are investing in a property that can potentially increase in value over time. That means your home may become an asset as you continue to live in it. Homeownership can also provide more control over your living space, from decorating to renovations that really fit your lifestyle. And here's something that many people don't realize. There are education programs and financial assistance options available for first-time home buyers. Some of these programs even offer grant funding that may help cover part of the upfront cost. And grants typically don't have to be repaid. That's why learning about home ownership options can be an important step toward making the best decision for you and your family. To learn more, visit toolsforhomeownership.com.
For most students, math class moves at the wrong pace. Some are way ahead of the class, others need more help along the way. That's why millions of families use Brilliant. Brilliant is the online math tutor that's visual and interactive. Students get hands-on with concepts until they make sense. And Brilliant sees their work, so when they get stuck, it knows how to help. It can ask the right question or sketch out the idea to help them find the next step. Brilliant keeps track of what they've mastered and where they still need help, then makes practice just for them. Students can build stronger foundations or move ahead as fast as they want, from fractions all the way to calculus. Brilliant even helps them set goals and keeps them motivated, so you don't have to. Brilliant was built by experts from MIT and Harvard and is trusted by millions of parents and teachers. Stop worrying about your kids' math and start seeing what they're capable of. Sign up at brilliant.org/tutor and get 20% off for back to school. That's brilliant.org/tutor.
It's 5:21. Welcome back to the Carolina Journal News Hour. Charlotte's FM News Talk, 107.9 FM, WBT. Continuing our coverage this morning of our exclusive Carolina Journal poll with David Larson from CarolinaJournal.com. Let's get into the big question that I think a lot of folks have been wondering, this major United States Senate race, a little aside, which really seemingly hasn't materialized in terms of all the spending. I remember months ago talking about this is going to be the most expensive, the most hotly watched U.S. Senate race here in North Carolina. And at least up to this point, David, that has not materialized. Former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper now holds a 12.5 percentage point lead on Michael Whatley, the former head of the North Carolina Republican Party and RNC. Our poll's been pretty consistent on this. Whatley has got a lot of ground to make up and a relatively short amount of time to do it.
And he's doing the opposite, it looks like, according to our polling. In the March poll, he was down 8. In the May poll, he was down 11. Now this one, he's closing in on 13 points down. So it looks like it's headed the wrong way for him. And as you said, you know, we were thinking this would be the most expensive race maybe in the history of the state. I had an article, a column I did a while back that, you know, it may not be, because if Cooper maintains this lead, Democrats are going to keep their powder dry and spend it in Maine or spend it in Iowa or even Texas, you know, Michigan, places where they think, okay, here's, until Whatley's able to close this gap, we're just going to ignore this race and spend our money elsewhere. So I think, you know, the summer's coming to a close. Fall is going to be starting here soon. You know, at the end of August, we're going to have to really think of this as the last stretch of the race. And spending, if they're going to make a move, Whatley's camp's going to have to, you know, get more name ID, more positive name ID, more, you know, maybe take a page from Trump and have some of these big events, something in a big arena like they did with Ted Budd, and, you know, something to catch a little bit of fire, get people's attention, because I still think he's a little bit in the background. And rather than gaining steam, it looks like in our recent polls, you know, he's losing a little bit each time.
And we have seen some other statewide polling over the last couple of weeks that have a little bit of a smaller margin than we have here in our most recent Carolina Journal poll, David. But regardless, some of those polls are still 7, 8, 9 percentage points. We haven't seen a poll in months now that have been conducted across the state that has this even in the ballpark of it being a competitive race, 4 or 5 points or something like that.
No, and ironically, the closest one was the Carolina Forward poll that had it within 7 or 8. That was Whatley's best one, but then the Elon one from yesterday was 11. And the problem with some of these is it's starting to show when your opponent is breaking 50% on a regular basis, it means not only do you have to make up ground and close that ground and get almost all of the undecided voters to, you know, you can't let almost any of those undecided voters go to Cooper if you're Whatley, but not only that, you have to start pulling from people who've already told the pollsters that they've made up their mind for your opponent. And that's difficult to do once somebody's made their mind up.
That is very difficult to do. We'll be keeping an eye, of course, on this race as we get into those fall months and really see this thing kick into overdrive. We'll continue our polls here over at CarolinaJournal.com. Let's head on over to the North Carolina Supreme Court for Republicans. They've been very successful over the last 10 years or so, David, picking off and winning North Carolina Supreme Court and Court of Appeals races. We did see the Jefferson Griffin race, a very close one back in 2024. We've got this tight race with incumbent Anita Earls, who is the Democrat currently sitting on the North Carolina Supreme Court, and former Representative Sarah Stevens of the North Carolina General Assembly. We just talked about a 12.5 percentage point difference between Roy Cooper and Michael Whatley. This race is much closer, just 3.6 percentage points. That's almost the margin of error in our poll.
Yeah, I think that's part of the interesting dynamic where maybe at a local level, you know, my congressman, my state member, the statewide races, they're not really thinking Trump. But for whatever reason, I think Whatley's, you know, he was closely associated with Trump, obviously, being RNC chair, helping in the last election there. So maybe in people's mind, if they're mad at Trump, and that's maybe Whatley's main claim to fame, that's a difficulty for him. But for some of these other races, I think this is basically like a generic ballot, because people don't probably know who Sarah Stevens is. Maybe they remember Anita Earls. She didn't actually win her last race in a usual fashion. They got rid of party primaries last time. And so Anita Earls actually won a race where she was running against two Republicans, because, you know, the way Republicans would put it is the Democrats had somebody switch, Chris Anglin. He switched from being a Democrat to a Republican and ran, because with no primary, all the candidates had to run in the general. And so it split the Republican vote and Anita Earls could win. So that was kind of a controversial race there. And so some would say Anita Earls, you know, I believe she was appointed anyways before that. So I might have some of that wrong, but that's my memory of it. And so, it, you know, it's a race where if she hadn't have won that with that interesting strategy, it would have been 6-1, but it's a 5-2 court. And I think Republicans would like to win this and make it a very dominant court for Republicans of 6-1. And before that, you know, it had been without party labels on the, you know, it had been that Democrats had had a very good history. They had, remember when all these districts were getting maps were getting thrown out and all of that when the Democrats were in charge. Some of those people had been elected back when there weren't party labels, I believe, on there. And so this, it turns into kind of a generic ballot, I believe, you know, for a lot of people where they just two people, two judges, they don't really know. And they'd see one with an R and one with a D. And so that's, I think, why it's a little bit closer on this one.
Yeah. And again, see, we've seen in recent years that Republicans have performed very well, even in years where for things have not necessarily gone great for Republicans everywhere else. They have done a pretty good job in these judicial races. And for them, they have to defend, I believe it's three seats coming up here in the next couple of years as some of these Supreme Court elections roll around. So this will be a pivotal race for them. And we know the Democrats are putting a lot behind it as well. A lot of what we are talking about here also revolves around what are the top issues affecting voters across the state of North Carolina. We asked exactly that question. The top five issues: inflation and the cost of living, that's one. Social Security and Medicare, that's two. Healthcare, below that, immigration, and then taxes and spending. A couple of interesting things in the percentages. The order is largely unchanged, but a couple of interesting things in here. Inflation and the cost of living is down about almost 3.5 percentage points. Social Security and Medicare, David, is up significantly. So is healthcare, and immigration is up over 5 percentage points from when we asked this question back in May. What's the deal with these top issues and some of these increases? Pretty significant, 5, 6, 7 points on a couple of these issues.
I think inflation and cost of living is a holdover from COVID, and it was such a dominant issue. All of your listeners will remember just how crazy the inflation was. Where, you know, it was, I don't even remember, in the double digits, just, you know, month after month after month. And that really made it difficult for people to find a place to live, find food to eat, you know, just basic necessities during COVID and then after. And so that number has stayed very high. It looks like it's come down a little bit, but I expect that to remain that high. You see the debates on social media about burrito prices still and things like that. Like, what is that all about? You know, why are we paying $20 for a burrito? Expect that one to dominate still. And it's interesting, to look at some of the others. Social Security and Medicare, that surprised me last time because that was something I did not expect to be as high. And now it's even higher. So I might have to do some research and do what exactly are people interested in this issue over. Part of it might be that we're reaching the limit where there's going to be forced cuts to Social Security in six years. So whatever senator we're electing right now, they're going to be the one to either make a decision somehow. So Social Security in six years. So whatever senator we're electing right now, they're going to be the one to either make a decision somehow. So Social Security does not hit this cliff and have these automatic cuts, or, you know, they're going to be able to kind of come up with some comprehensive, very difficult to touch Social Security. But it looks like we're going to get to the place where they either have to throw granny off the cliff. You know, they have all those videos where if you touch it, that's, you know, some big sin, obviously, to even think about that. But it looks like they're going to have to, or else, you know, automatic cuts will happen. So there's no doing nothing anymore on that. Some of the other ones, you know, healthcare, I think that's largely wrapped up into the cost of living, is that it's just North Carolina is one of the most expensive states for healthcare. It was interesting. You said immigration, that was the top issue for Republicans. So even though it's down the list a little bit, Republicans jumped and, you know, I think there's a lot of stories. There's the Ceuta thing in Spain. You know, there's been all the local battles over ban ICE and these protests. And I think some of that is, you know, on social media and places. It depends on the media you're consuming that might be the biggest issue you're looking at for a lot of people. National security, I thought was interesting because that's only up one percentage point. You think, you know, the war in Iran, and, you know, maybe that would be jumped to the top in some people's minds, you know, for another 1% of people made that their top. So I think really issues closer to home are still dominating, especially prices.
More details on our August Carolina Journal poll with David Larson coming up after this. You're listening to the Carolina Journal News Hour.
Have you ever thought about the difference between paying rent and owning a home? When you rent, your monthly payment helps cover the cost of living there, but it usually doesn't build anything for your future. Home ownership is different. Each payment you make on a home may help build equity, which is the value you own in the property over time. As that equity grows, it can become a financial asset that may support your long-term goals. Owning a home can also provide stability. You have a place that's yours where you can build memories, establish roots, and truly make the space your own. And the good news is that many people are surprised to learn there are programs designed to help first-time home buyers get started, including grants and assistance programs that may help with down payments or closing costs. Learning about your options is the first step toward making an informed decision about your future. Visit toolsforhomeownership.com.
For most students, math class moves at the wrong pace. Some are way ahead of the class, others need more help along the way. That's why millions of families use Brilliant. Brilliant is the online math tutor that's visual and interactive. Students get hands-on with concepts until they make sense. And Brilliant sees their work, so when they get stuck, it knows how to help. It can ask the right question or sketch out the idea to help them find the next step. Brilliant keeps track of what they've mastered and where they still need help, then makes practice just for them. Students can build stronger foundations or move ahead as fast as they want, from fractions all the way to calculus. Brilliant even helps them set goals and keeps them motivated, so you don't have to. Brilliant was built by experts from MIT and Harvard and is trusted by millions of parents and teachers. Stop worrying about your kids' math and start seeing what they're capable of. Sign up at brilliant.org/tutor and get 20% off for back to school. That's brilliant.org/tutor.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to the Carolina Journal News Hour. Charlotte's FM News Talk, 107.9 FM, WBT. Wrapping up our conversation with David Larson from CarolinaJournal.com on our exclusive August Carolina Journal poll. Let's dive into the weeds on a couple of the different policy issues that we have covered in extensive detail over on our website, CarolinaJournal.com. A lot of work by our fellows over at the John Locke Foundation on a variety of different topics here across North Carolina. One of the things, David, I'm sure you've seen all over social media is a price of electricity. Folks on a variety of different Facebook groups, Nextdoor.com, and even now seeping onto Twitter, posting pictures of their Duke energy bills here across North Carolina, $300-$500 a month bills. We asked this question: what should be the most important feature of electricity policy? Affordability, reliability, or zero carbon emissions? More than 60% of voters in this poll say it's all about affordability. I guess that shouldn't be a big surprise.
Yeah, when we looked at that top issue one, climate change used to be a top issue for a lot of Democrats. It's only 7.8%. So similarly here, when you ask affordability, reliability, zero carbon, a lot of people are looking at their bill and they're thinking, you know what? I want reliable energy. We had, you know, those Christmas Eve blackouts. We've had some difficulty, you know, in the really hot days of summer with having to adjust which power plant and an emergency order from the federal government allowing us to switch that during some of these hot days in North Carolina. And, you know, they want that reliability and they also want affordability. That's the main thing, I think, really, is they don't want to get that bill and just keeping the air conditioning on and their refrigerator going. They don't want to have to pay some bill that's going to break the bank for them when so other many costs are high. So, you know, things like nuclear power, natural gas, you know, even clean coal, I think people are open to that. And while they might think, okay, we do want to reduce emissions, they want to do it in a practical way that still keeps affordability and reliability as first in their mind.
Yeah. And again, for a lot of those folks that may be very ginned up on a lot of these climate change discussions, David, it's a good thing in theory, but when you're getting a $700 a month energy bill from Duke Energy, and you're paying for that, I would imagine that some folks' opinions change. Again, affordability was at 60.7%, reliability 23.1%, and zero carbon emissions at 11.3%. We will likely see this be a major discussion in the General Assembly as we flip the calendar over to 2027 and kick off the new legislative long session next year. We know it was a big issue this year. That will likely continue. We'll be keeping a close eye on that. All right, here's an interesting one for you. Does the increased cost of corporate income taxes for employers lead to lower worker wages? This is maybe a kind of a more fundamental question on tax policy here in North Carolina. Only 40% of people said increasing the taxes that your employer pays affects their wages, compared to 36.6% that said no. Those are two very close numbers on this issue. What do you make of the tax policy question here, David?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think in the minds of a lot of people, you know, if you don't see the, you know, the profit margins for different areas, you know, like, oh, like a restaurant has like this 1 or 2 or 3% profit margin in all these different industries, you might just think, I'm working, all this money is going to these bosses, and then, you know, they're just keeping all that money. So if we tax them a bunch, that's not really going to matter. They just have all this money for that to come out of. When often there really is those razor sharp margins, you know, they have to pay back investors. They have to pay for the brick and mortar. They have to pay for all the sourcing for all of their whatever it is that they're selling for the product or service. So it really, when it comes down to it, you know, a lot of people, I don't think they're aware that actually, if you raise their taxes, and this goes to the next couple questions we had too, where it says, if they're hit with a tariff, is that going to go to the down to the consumers? If they're hit with a corporate tax, is that going to go down to the consumers? You know, we asked those just to see, those three questions were kind of a package in a way, just to see, you know, okay, do they realize what happens when money comes out of the top from the corporation? What impact is that going to have on both worker wages and the ultimate cost to the consumer?
Oh, people seem to understood it pretty clearly when we asked that tariff question. 81% of people said yes, the tariffs will be passed on to the consumer. 71.1% said that corporate taxes, if those are increased, that will be passed on to the consumer as well. They didn't seem to think it had an impact on their individual wages. I thought that was, again, rather interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why they would, you know, the same pool of money that is left over to, you know, increase their wages would also be in question if they don't raise prices, but their overall costs go up due to a tax increase. So I'm not really sure the reasoning there, but it's a mob of people that are feeling one way or another. You know, you can't really get a sense of why one of them might have chosen those specific things.
North Carolina currently has one of the longest early voting schedules in the United States. Virginia, I still think, is in the first slot. North Carolina is either second or third. Early voting will kick off here for the midterm elections coming up on October the 15th. 17 days of early voting. We have seen with some recent legislation through the North Carolina General Assembly to pull that early voting period back for municipal elections. Those are off-year elections like we'll see in North Carolina General Assembly, to pull that early voting period back for municipal elections. Those are off-year elections like we'll see in 2027, and primary elections that we see on general election years as well. We asked voters, North Carolina now offers 17 days of early voting before Election Day, and should the state offer, here are the options: no early voting days, more early voting days, fewer early voting days, the same number of voting days. I found this interesting. 45% said the same number, so they were pretty happy with that. But 28.8, almost 29% of people said we needed more than 17 days of early voting. David, we know that this is a huge strain on the 100 County Board of Elections. It's a strain on the candidates and their volunteers. Once we get to that middle point of October, it is a slug over the next couple of weeks as we approach early November. What do you make of that?
Well, I think having such a dominant group say, keep it the same, to me, that's just a sign that, you know, most people, if they haven't gotten a lot of information on an issue, nothing seems broken to them when they go vote. They think, yeah, it seems about fine. Maybe if it had been 10 days and everything seemed fine to them, they would have said the same thing. Ah, seems fine. Keep it about the same. But I don't think people are very aware of the strain that you mentioned That, you know, you have to, they're having a hard time finding volunteers. They're having a hard time finding candidate poll workers. Poll workers. And so it's difficult to maintain it all. And often if you look at how people are voting, you know, it's the beginning of early voting. A ton of people go in those first couple of days of early voting. Oh, early voting's about to end. A ton of people will go, right, last couple of days of it. But a lot of times in that middle zone, there are quite a few days where, you know, some of the workers at the polls will tell you it's a ghost town. You know, people after that first rush and then before the last rush, there's sometimes not a ton of people there. So some of them are at least wanting the permission to, you know, lower that and to be able to just try to cram it in 10 days.
Yeah, we'll see how legislation continues to play out on that. Let's jump down a couple of questions to number 20, cannabis regulation. We've seen a lot of discussion about hemp over the last couple of weeks, major protest at the General Assembly, law enforcement speaking in favor of legislation that now remains relatively uncertain in the North Carolina House as it relates to hemp. But let's jump on over to cannabis. We asked the question, do you believe North Carolina needs more or less regulation of intoxicating cannabis-related products? Pretty interesting results there. 31% said more, 37% said less. That was the largest in this question. And 20% said about absolutely the same. And while, yes, there are some different margins there, David, it's kind of all over the map with those three different options.
I think people aren't really aware necessarily. Like if you're not kind of like the last one, if you're not really knowledgeable of the intoxicating hemp industry, you might think it's already illegal because it kind of is already illegal. There's just a loophole that wasn't really intended to be there for intoxicating drinks and products like that. And there's people that are creating things based legally about how, 0.3 and 0.4 and very specific percentages of THC, but when it's in a certain format, it can still be intoxicating. And so they can make a product. So I think maybe if you're not really aware of that particular industry, you think, yeah, it's fine from what most people think. I mean, it's illegal, right? Okay. And so I think there are reason, you know, opinions all over the place is I think probably most people are either against it as, you know, culturally or even legally. There's some people that are saying, oh, you know, it'd be all right, but let's tax it or let's have it at least for age 21 and have it regulated. So I think that's generally where opinion is, but you know, whether they know exactly what the status quo is, I think this is one I think is a complicated enough issue based on these loopholes that I'm not sure, you know, a lot of people really understand the loophole.
No question about that. We'll see coming up in November when the General Assembly is supposed to come back after the election, if there will be some movement on that hemp bill. There's also some discussion and debate involving U.S. Senator Ted Budd. He was battling for this up in Washington, D.C. over the last couple of weeks on a restriction that is supposed to be coming up November the 12th. So we'll be keeping a close eye on that. All right, let's round out with this. Voting for Democratic Socialists, the term and the phrase and the acronym DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, have gotten a lot of play as these primary elections have been taking place across a variety of states here in the U.S. Our question was, would you be more likely or less likely to support a candidate who identifies as a Democratic Socialist? The overwhelming plurality in this poll, 43.6%, said much less likely. But there's some other interesting numbers in here, David. 15% said much more likely to vote for a candidate that ascribes to the DSA. And then 17% said that they were neither more or less likely, depending on that. That's an odd thing because some of the platforms from the DSA are very radical. The fact that 17% would say doesn't change my opinion one way or the other seems a little bit unbelievable to me.
Yeah, thankfully, 49%, if you take the less likely, much less, and somewhat less. That's just under a majority that would say I'm less likely to vote for somebody. And then, you know, there's a few other opinions, but I do think most people, especially over a certain age, they've had a lifetime of seeing socialist projects, whether in a big city or whether in a country like North Korea, Cuba, Venezuela. They've seen those come and go. Especially, you know, the boomer generation seeing Soviet Union, you know, remembering, you know, the United Soviet Socialist Republics, you know, it's socialism is maybe getting it as a vaguer term where people don't remember that the Marxist version of socialism, which is the main version that is pushed academically and all that, is to for the workers to own the means of production. So if you're in a capitalist nation, you know, where you have a job or you have a property of your own, or they don't really believe in private property in the same way. And you hear that in some of Mondami's administration, where they talk about, we need to get over the idea of people owning their homes, things like that, where it's like, no, we don't. That's we're based on private property. And if you work for something, you should we won't be as productive. And this has been shown time and again. If you draw a line in the middle of Korea and you have to more of a socialist model, half to a capitalist, you're going to see from outer space looking down on it what one system does or versus the other. And so I think the socialist model, a lot of people are not being taught this in school. And so when they go to their private, you know, their public K-12, and when they go to their colleges, whether public or private, you know, liberal arts school, what they're getting taught is, oh man, capitalism causes a lot of disparities, or, you know, that kind of thing. They're not really saying, oh, there was a huge disparity between the Politburo and the person in the gulag. You know, that's worth noting too. Or, you know, just not being aware of that these socialist experiments on things like price caps, you know, rent caps, and public grocery stores that are run by the government. All of these experiments have been done a lot. So this is me on a rant, but not exactly talking about the poll, but just talking about, you know, there's a lot of people, I think, that are aware, but it's in an older generation. If you were to break down that 15% or whatever, that was like, oh, that would be much better. Yeah, I'm almost positive that there are people that had recently been in school and they do not have a lot of life experiencing seeing these same experiments. They probably will have plenty of opportunity to see those experiments, because human beings are pretty stupid in not learning from history. And we'll probably repeat them another 20 times so that they can see it again. And then they'll be the ones looking down and wondering why people younger than them are going to be saying the same about future democratic socialists.
It is going to be fascinating, zooming out here from North Carolina. It's going to be fascinating as we approach November to see what the DSA does and how many of their candidates they are able to successfully get into places like the United States Congress or even state legislatures here across the United States. We have 25 questions in our poll. We unfortunately do not have time here to get through every single one of them. We have our full poll results. You can get our crosstabs, all the analysis and breakdowns over on our website, carolinajournal.com. We appreciate the insight and information this morning. David Larson joins us on the Carolina Journal News Hour. 5:57. Welcome back to the Carolina Journal News Hour. A lot of great information on our poll this morning. You can check out all those details by visiting our website, carolinajournal.com. We've got the poll tab right there on the top of the website. And that's going to do it for a Friday edition of the Carolina Journal News Hour. WBT News is next, followed by Good Morning BT. We're back with you Monday morning, 5 to 6, right here on Charlotte's FM News Talk, 107.9 FM, WBT.